Now, the deal between the U.S. and Iran has been described as President Trump as performance-based, with Tehran benefiting only if it complies with its commitments. So what exactly is in the agreement? But the memorandum calls for an end to all conflicts linked to the war, including the fighting in Lebanon. Tehran has warned that any continued Israeli military operations in Lebanon would amount to a violation of the agreement and would prompt a response. But the deal also requires Iran not to develop, acquire, or possess a nuclear weapon. In return, the U.S. would begin lifting restrictions on Iran's economy, including ending its blockade within 30 days and unfreezing Iranian assets. And at the same time, the agreement commits a $300 billion U.S. dollar fund for the reconstruction and economic development of the country that Washington is not required to contribute. It also seeks to safeguard one of the world's most important shipping routes. It guarantees a safe passage through the Strait of Hormuz, with transit fees waived for 2 months. Iran says it retains sovereignty over the waterway and reserves the right to begin charging vessels once that period expires. Both sides will now enter a 60-day negotiating phase aimed at reaching a final agreement, though the timeline can be extended if Washington and Tehran agree more time is needed. All right, for more, we are joined by Stephen David. He's a professor of international relations at Johns Hopkins University. Thank you so much for joining us, Professor. So Mr. Trump stresses that this is only an MOU, not a final deal. But based on terms that have been released so far, do you see a stronger agreement on the table than Obama's 2015 Iran nuclear deal?
No, I don't. Part of the problem is that the specifics of the deal, the details, have yet to be laid out. All we know is that the Strait of Hormuz will be open. And remember, before the American-Israeli attacks, it was open. And the United States will provide economic benefits to Iran for doing so. The specifics of exactly what Iran will have to do regarding nuclear weapons have not been laid out. And the notion that somehow they're all going to be concluded in 60 days, I think, is ludicrous.
Professor, at this time, this MOU seems one-sided in Iran's favor. The U.S. has to lift its naval blockade, waive all sanctions, unfreeze Tehran's assets. And all Iran has to do, apparently, is reopen the waterway within 30 days and make some sort of a vague pledge about nuclear weapons. So I'm wondering what may be behind the U.S. giving so many concessions.
Well, it's a good question. Clearly, President Trump was concerned that this war with Iran was very unpopular with the American public, was causing all kinds of economic problems, gas prices especially raised over a dollar a gallon. The midterm elections are coming up in November. He was under a lot of pressure to get a deal with Iran that would enable the United States to claim victory and stop the conflict. But again, one has to ask what was accomplished by this deal. The United States and Iran had a reasonable agreement before the war began. Then the war occurred. 3,000 people were killed, billions of dollars of damage. What did this fighting accomplish? The Trump administration has not given us a persuasive answer to this question.
And Professor David, the biggest question, you know, for many Asian countries feeling the energy squeeze is this: when exactly is the Strait going to reopen? And will there be fees charged on paper? You know, that should be no later than, what, mid-July or so. But some reports are talking about Article 13 on Iran's frozen funds as a potential issue. And there's also that 60-day period, you know, for toll-free transit in the waterway. But that suggests it could change because it leaves the door open to more fees in the future. Some thoughts on that, perhaps, Professor?
Sure, there are tremendous uncertainties as to when the straits will open. It's going to take time to relieve the logjam of hundreds of ships who have been unable to get out. There are a lot of concerns regarding just when American sanctions will be relaxed, whether the United States is going to facilitate billions, maybe hundreds of billions of dollars going to Iran. Remember, Trump was vicious with the Biden administration, and prior to that, with the Obama deal that provided for much smaller amounts of money, unfreezing Iranian funds to go to Iran. So, again, tremendous amounts of uncertainty about really everything connected with the deal.
Okay, so Professor, I wonder ultimately what worries you the most about this pending deal? Is it the nuclear provisions, the funding commitments, the absence of missile restrictions, or the broader geopolitical sort of impact?
Well, what worries me is that if you look at the objectives of going to war with Iran that was stated up front by President Trump and others, none have been met. I mean, President Trump called for a regime change, and that clearly did not happen. Iran was supposed to not present an offensive threat to the region by having its missile force destroyed. That did not happen. There was supposed to be an agreement that Iran would no longer support its proxies, Hamas, Hezbollah, the Houthis. That not only hasn't happened, but if Iran is going to be flush with cash, it will be further enabled to support its proxies throughout the region. Iran comes out of this agreement, in my view, much stronger simply by surviving, and America much weaker by giving in. Moreover, this whole affair is likely to drive a further wedge between the United States and Israel. The memorandum of understanding included ceasefire with Lebanon. Israel would like freedom of action to respond to attacks with Hezbollah. So once again, we have friction in the American-Israeli relationship. Again, I come to the question, what did this war accomplish? And it seems to me it's done far more harm than good.
I want to push you a little bit more about Israel. Nobody there seems to like this because, as you say, there are fears the money could be used to rebuild its military and missile stockpiles, and fund the proxies like Hezbollah. I mean, these fears presumably are founded to some degree, but is there anything Israel or Benjamin Netanyahu can do about it right now?
Not very much. Israel depends on the United States for diplomatic support, for military support, and for a long time now, the solid American-Israeli relationship has been becoming much less solid. Public opinion in the United States, for the first time in many decades, has, in a majority sense, turned against Israel. There are arguments that the whole reason for the war is that Netanyahu persuaded Trump to engage in this conflict, which I think is somewhat unfair. I mean, Trump makes his own decisions, but nevertheless, the arguments are there. But again, Israel faces an existential threat from Iran. Iran's leadership has consistently called for the destruction of the State of Israel, and its pursuit of nuclear weapons would give it the capability to do what it threatens. So Israel wanted out of this conflict an Iran that had, in their view, a different government with the nuclear program really put in mothballs. Neither of that has happened. Again, as I mentioned before, the support for the proxies, the continuation of the missile threat is all there. And now on top of it, Bibi Netanyahu and Trump are apparently at odds with one another. Not a good outcome for Israel at all.
Understood. Professor, we leave it there. We thank you so much for your time this morning. Stephen David is Professor of International Relations at Johns Hopkins University.